Welcome to episode 238 of Board Game Blitz, a podcast about all things board games that you can listen to in less time than it takes to pack for a week-long trip to Disney World. Board Game Blitz is sponsored by Gray Fox Games. This week, we are talking about our top five games that we've played out of BGG's top 100 games. First, we discuss a couple games we've played recently, Rescuing Robin Hood, Tiwanaku, and Holiday Hijinks, The Independence Incident. Then, we dive into BGG's top 100 list to discuss our favorite picks. And now, here are your hosts,
Ambi
and Crystal.
Recently, I got a review copy of Rescuing Robin Hood, which is a cooperative deck building game. I also have an affiliate link, so Poggers.com sells a lot of different stuff, and they got this game and some other games that they sent me review copies of, and then we have affiliate link for them. So if you want to buy this game, you can click on the affiliate link and we'll get a percentage of it. But I should do my review too. So, but afterwards, if you want to buy it or if you want to buy anything else, you can click on the link. But anyways, Rescuing Robin Hood is designed by Bryce Brown, published by Castillo Games, published in 2021. It is 1 to 5 players. I played it with 4 players, and it says 60 to 90 minutes. On the box, it says 20 minutes per player. It took us a while because it was our first play, so I think it took us 2 hours. But yeah, it's probably 20 minutes per player is probably accurate when you know how to play. So in Rescuing Robin Hood, you are working together to rescue Robin Hood. I guess he got captured by the Sheriff of Nottingham, and then you're in his crew trying to rescue him. You have these cards of villagers. So the cards in your deck are villagers, and everyone starts with 8 cards. You're going to be playing 4 each round. There's 5 rounds in the game. And so the villager cards will have, there's 4 different stat things. There's, I think, wit, stealth, brawn, and joy, I think. Joy is a wild that you can use to increase your stat in any of the other ones. But basically, you're going to play your 4 cards down, and you also have a character card that's your special character, and that has some stats on it too. And so your character card plus the 4 cards you play each round is going to be your stats. So you have a little board where you mark with a cube what your stats are. And everyone does this. And then the cards also sometimes have skill tokens that you can play, and so the skills can do different things. And what you're trying to do is defeat these guards. So each round there's going to be rows of guards out on the table, a certain number of guards, and there's blue guards and red guards, and blue guards are easier to kill than red guards, but they also have the 3 stats, the wit, stealth, and brawn stats on them with numbers. And basically, to kill them, you want to have equal to or more than their stats, but you're doing multiple at a time. So you're going to have wit of 15 or something maybe, and then the guards, the blue go up to 6. So you can do multiple ones if they add up to 15 or less. And each attribute is a different way of attacking. So the wit is kind of a press your luck thing. The guards are in a line and you kind of do flip over one at a time and be like, okay, I'm going to keep going. And if you bust, then none of the guards are defeated. But if you stop, then they're all defeated. And then stealth is you pick all the guards that you're going to attack, but you can pick any of them. So you don't have to do the one at the front first. You pick a certain number and then it's all or nothing again. So you either defeat them all or nothing. And then brawl or brawn or something, whatever, fight, is you have to pick the whole row and defeat them all at once. And the row can get up to 11 people in the row or something. There's a lot of guards. But what's special about the fight brawn stat is anything that you don't use gets sent over to the next person. That and your wild one, the joy one. So one person will go, they do 2 attacks on their turn. And so you're preparing, you're using these skills. The skills do different things. You can scout, look at guards, you can move guards, you can get extra attack power on your things. And so you do 2 separate attacks and that have to be separate stats. So you can't do 2 wit attacks. And then your unused brawn, I should look at what it actually is called.
I mean, but really kind of the same thing. But
anyway, that gets sent to the next person, and same with your unused wild one. And so the last person is going to have a lot of this red fighting ability, and then they can just destroy a whole line. Also, each row of guards has villagers next to it. So the way the setup works is it has cards that tell you how to set up. It'll have villagers and then how many guards you have next to it. And so when you defeat all of the guards in a row, then you get those villagers. They go to this forest place. I don't know Robin Hood lore, but yeah, so they go to this place. And then at the end of the round, then you get to get those cards into your deck. So that's the deck building part, but you get them into your discard pile. You get 8 cards at the beginning. You're going to play 4 cards in round 1 and 4 cards in round 2. So you're playing all of those cards, and then you take cards and put them in your discard pile for the next time for rounds 3 and 4. But after round 2, you actually get to get rid of cards that you don't want back to 8. So you're always going to get all of the cards in your deck. So it's not that much deck building. It's more like deck replacing, kind of like, because you kind of know it, there's not much shuffling, or it's just like 4 and 4. And then for the last round, it's 5 rounds.
Deck switcheroo.
Yeah. Yeah. So the 5th round, you just pick 4 cards, and that's going to be your hand of 4. So you kind of know what you're getting into. And then at the end of the game, the last round, you're trying to rescue Robin Hood. And then there's a bonus goal of defeating Sheriff. So you win if you rescue Robin Hood, which is after like 3 rows of guards, and then you get Robin Hood, and those guards are harder. But then there's like a 4th for us. I think it was a 5th row was the Sheriff. And that gets really hard. He gets extra points for all the villagers you didn't save. There's a lot of guards, and you have to like defeat all of them. And so we were close to beating the Sheriff, but we didn't. But we did rescue.
But you rescued Robin Hood. Yay.
Yeah. So that counts as a win. Anyway, I thought the game was okay.
Really pushing that affiliate link there.
Yeah.
You're like, here, click here to buy this game. It's okay.
Yeah. The rule book was not very good. I was very confused, and I'm still confused about some of the rules. One of my friends actually posted a rules question because we had one during like the end. Like, we're not, it doesn't say if you like spend the resources that you use to attack, because usually you're attacking with different attributes and you can't use the same one twice. But like when you rescue Robin Hood, it says you get a bonus action of attacking that you can use the same one that you've used before. So then it's like, was that all spent when we did it? Like, do we subtract out or not? We're not sure. And so we played that it was spent, but if it wasn't, then maybe we would have won and beaten the Sheriff too. So like, I don't know. It seems like it should have been spent. And then also another thing is like, you know, I said that it has to be equal to or more for you to win. That's only mentioned in an example and not in the main part of the rule book. Everywhere else says is more than or is less than you lose. And if it's more than, then you win. And then in one of the examples, it's like, because the merry band wins on ties. And I'm like, wait, where does it say that?
Oh gosh.
So yeah, the rule book was not great, so there's some interpretation needed for that. So that was a little bit annoying, but like, what I think once you figure out the rules, it would go a lot more smoothly. Yeah, the 20 minutes per player seems accurate. The setup, it does seem like it scales well per players because of the setup's different. Like for 4 players, it had a lot of rows and a lot of guards, and for fewer players it would have less. So it makes sense because there's more people attacking in more players. I think it's one I might want to try like solo or 2 player maybe. Because like with more players, there's a lot more downtime waiting for other people to do their turns. And there's a lot of arithmetic for like a family weight game, because you're adding up all these cards and you're trying to think, what's the probability of me beating, like there's 4 cards and I have this much brawn. Do I think I can do that? Because the average of the cards is 3.3. And so maybe I want to get this much. And stuff. And then when you're actually like adding it up, there's a lot of adding it up. So that was a lot for a family weight game, I think. Although I guess if you're playing with kids, they're generally good at arithmetic. If they're like in 4th grade or something, they're in 4th grade, I don't know, at that age where they're doing a bunch of arithmetic all the time. So maybe that actually helps. Maybe also because of our group, it wasn't that exciting because we wouldn't press our luck as much. We would kind of see like, oh, okay, we know now, we've scouted, we see what they are, we know we can beat this, and so we're going to do it. Because if you lose a fight, it does, it's like really bad because you just lose all of that progress and you can't like defeat the row then, because we wanted to be able to defeat all these rows and you only get so many attacks. So yeah, we were playing it safe mostly, which seems like the way to win, but also didn't have that many exciting points to it. I guess if we did more of the press your luck stuff, maybe it would be more exciting. But yeah, that was Rescuing Robin Hood. Oh, it also comes with this like unnecessary character guide. It's like a whole book, like 30 page book of all of the villager cards. It has like backstories of all of the cards. So that it, if you like that, that's
is
neat.
Interesting? Question mark?
But yeah, so if you want to get
this, I like the artwork.
It's an affiliate link. Yeah, oh yeah, it has nice artwork.
I kind of like that style, that like it's almost like kind of like construction paper cutout style.
Oh yeah,
esque. It's nicer looking than that, but it kind of, mm-hmm. Yeah, like, you know, very
like cel shaded,
not rounded. What's the like, word for that? Yeah, like I don't know. I like it though.
Yeah, so that was Rescuing Robin Hood, and we have an affiliate link for that in the show notes if you want to get it.
All right. Well, the game that I'm going to be discussing today is called Tiwanaku. It is a game designed and published in 2022 by Olivier Gregoire, published by Sit Down. It is thematically supposed to represent that there are pre-Columbian tribes in the Andes Mountains that when they came out of their caves, they were discovering new areas that had never been touched by humans, and they are trying to discover the areas of that land under Pachamama, Mother Earth, and what areas of the land will, like, what crops will grow in what areas, basically. The reason I'm mentioning all of that, this is not really a theme-heavy game, and I don't know if the designer or the anyone involved in the publishing has any background tied to this particular culture. And I think that that is something that should generally be considered when designing games, but it is an interesting cultural thing to read about. But I, again, I don't know if they have any specific ties to the culture, so I don't want to speak to that. This is a deduction game that can be played either solo, competitively, or cooperatively, which is cool. It's always nice to have lots of options in that regard. The board is a 5x9, I think, grid that is not populated at the beginning of the game. And throughout the course of the game, you will take your meeple and you're basically going out and exploring. You're using movement rules to move to spaces of the board that either don't have a terrain tile on them yet or possibly do. I'm not going to go over the movement rules because that's not interesting, but basically when you move to an area that does not yet have a terrain tile, you get to reveal what the terrain tile for that area is. And this is a good time to note that I have not played this game in its physical form. I have only played this digitally. So this game comes in its physical form with a wheel that you either, like, on one side of it has information, the other side has different information, and you, like, slide a thing into it. And there's different windows that you can reveal different parts of the information from. I am not super clear on how that wheel functions because I've never used it. But it is basically how you seed the game and how when you go to places, it will reveal what is actually hidden there. But because I played this digitally, all of that was just handled digitally. And so I can't really speak to the functionality of the wheel, but reading about it in the rule book, it seems like it's a pretty neat little system that they've come up with. But again, whether it's really fiddly or difficult to use, I can't say. But since I played it digitally, you move to a space and then you get to reveal the type of terrain that's there. And eventually you will start revealing what types of crops are on the different terrain types. Basically, what you're trying to deduce is all of those things, like the different types of terrains and the different types of crops in as much variety as possible. So you want to reveal lots of different types of crops and different types of terrain, and there are rules as to how those things can appear on the board. Like, terrain areas can be anything from 1 to 5 tiles, it might be 2 to 5 tiles, orthogonally adjacent to one another, and then each terrain area that is made up of those tiles will consist of, each tile within the area will be a different crop, and no crop can touch itself anywhere on the board, including from other terrain types. So, like, let's say I go to a space and I want to guess what crop is there. If I can see that, for instance, there's corn and quinoa in spaces adjacent to the space that I'm in, I know that the space I'm in cannot contain those crops because it would break the rules of the game. Oh, and the terrain areas, they can't touch each other even diagonally. So if there's a green terrain area nearby, you know that the tiles around it are a different type of terrain. And you score different values of points depending on how many of each type of thing you've discovered. You will lose points for making some incorrect guesses. And then eventually, once everything on the board is revealed, then whoever has the most points wins. I know I'm doing a pretty poor job of explaining it, but it's a deduction game. If you enjoy deduction games, this is kind of a no-brainer. The first time I played it, I was a little bit baffled at first about what was going on, but then I slowly was like, oh, okay, I get it now. And it's a weirdly satisfying deduction game because you get that kind of like feeling of, as as you reveal more things, you know more things, and it just feels more and more satisfying because you're like, ooh, now I know that and that and that, and I can move over there and do this. And so then it's about trying to get that diversification to score more points. And so it's not just the deduction, it's also kind of about planning ahead and being able to get to the right places to score the points that you want to score. I played this competitively. I haven't been able to play it cooperatively, and I don't typically play games solo, but I am curious to know how it works cooperatively. I think I'll probably, I don't know if that's available on BGA. It probably is. I'll probably try that in the near future. But Ambi, I know you like deduction games, so I figured this would be a good one to talk about because I think you would enjoy it.
Yeah, this was actually on my want to play list, and I was like, huh, why is it on my want to play? Before you started talking about it, I was looking at it and I scrolled down, I'm like, oh, deduction, that's why.
Yep. And the name does not scream deduction, right? Yeah. Like, there are some games where you search for Planet X, you're like, oh, that's probably a deduction game. Tiwanaku does not scream that, but the game really is quite lovely, and I enjoyed it. I enjoyed it a lot. So this might be one that I have to add to my collection physically, and I am curious to see how the wheel works in its physical form. I'm hoping that it's nice and easy and really, you know, simple to understand, but I just, hard to say, because I don't know. So that is Tiwanaku.
And I forgot to mention, I also played the Holiday Hijinks, the Independence Incident, which is the one for 4th of July, the
Huzzah!
Independence Day in the US. We had gotten a lot of these as review copies, and so I've been playing through them. It's an 18-card escape room type game. This one is more puzzle hunt heavy, it felt like. It says difficulty 3 out of 3, but I actually didn't have to use any hints, although I did use like a crossword solver for one of the things because it had more like crosswordy type puzzle hunt things, and some of that needed like a little bit more outside information. There also needs a lot of American information because it's themed around Independence Day and American holiday, but it had a lot of that in like the website helper. So that's nice. It has like info about different things that are useful. So
yeah, these games are always really good about making sure that if outside information is needed, they provide it to you.
Yeah. But yeah, so this one, I think, I'm not sure I would recommend it as a first Holiday Hijinks to get unless you're like into puzzle hunt type things. I think it leans more heavily on the puzzle hunt part. It was also more linear. It was only one puzzle at a time. But if you like 4th of July, it has a lot of American 4th of July stuff in there.
Hooray!
Yay!
Way back in December of 2021, which is weirdly a long time ago, although anything beyond 2020 is all kind of a weird blur at this point, we did an episode where we discussed our top 5 want-to-play games from the BGG Top 100 list, meaning like games we had not played from the Top 100 that we wanted to play. And so we're flipping it on its head, and today we're going to talk about our top 5 games that we have played from the current Top 100 on BGG, which is different than the Top 100 was then because it changes all the time. So this is also as of recording. So by the time you hear this episode, some of these games theoretically, although probably not most of them.
Hopefully they're still going to be on there.
Yeah, I think all of our picks are likely solid. Like none of these are like brand new games to the Top 100. So I imagine they'll still be there. But it's, you know, who knows? Anything can happen.
All right, onto our list. My number 5 is Azul, which is a drafting tile placement game. I like it because it's a competitive game where it's an abstract game where you're placing tiles and you're trying to draft tiles and like take them from other people. Like you want to get the ones that other people want and you're looking at what other people want and then you kind of take it. And it can be very competitive in that way. And also there's like some fun tile placement and trying to line them up to get more points. So yeah, I like Azul.
And it's pretty.
And it's pretty.
This was like just outside of my top 5, basically. I also really like the Azul series of games and the first one is great. My number 5 is higher on Ambi's list, but I guess I could go ahead and talk about it because it's coming up next. So my number 5 is Ambi's number 4.
Yep.
And that is Pandemic Legacy Season 1. We've talked about this game in the past. This was my first Legacy game. Had you played any Legacy games prior to this one?
No, I think this was my first. Like, okay, we're not counting campaign games.
Campaign. Yeah, like, yeah. Pure Legacy. Like, this was the first game that told me to tear cards in half. Yeah, and, like, and put stickers on the board. And you know what? And, like, I think the fact that it was the first shades it a little bit in a good way because it was so neat and different. But truly, Pandemic Legacy Season 1 is also just a really well-designed game. The story is compelling, and there are surprising moments, and it takes that Pandemic game that we all know and love and really put some interesting twists into it. And it made you, like, there are characters, like the people that you're playing that you would normally play in Pandemic, like, you become weirdly attached to. Yeah. Like, in normal Pandemic, I have no emotion toward the character I'm playing. And in Pandemic Legacy, I was, like, attached.
You name them, and then they get, like, upgrades and stuff, and you put stickers, like, on them. They have a story to them.
They do. And so you really do get attached, and that means something. And I think that really, it was a really revolutionary game, and it kind of kicked off the modern legacy game era of board games.
It was also nice, like, just playing with the same group. That was back in a time when I could play, like, a legacy game with the group consistently, which I can't do now.
My number four game is Quacks of Quedlinburg, which apparently is now just called Quacks, because that is how it is listed on Board Game Geek at this point, but I like the full name. Quacks of Quedlinburg is a push-your-luck game where you are making tinctures and potions, essentially, and you're pulling ingredients out of your bag, which are tokens, and you're putting them onto your board, which is essentially like your pot that you're throwing your ingredients into, and you're trying not to blow things up. This one's just fun every time. There are some issues with runaway leaders in this game occasionally, but it's usually quick enough and fun enough that it's not too bad. And there are some catch-up mechanisms, like the little rat tails along the scoring track give the people further back more advantages. But I have seen, even with the rat tails, somebody in first, like, really, like, kind of pull away. But I love it. It's fun. It's quirky. I like push-your-luck games. So that's my number four, Quacks.
My number three, I haven't played in a long time. Actually, most of the games on my list, I haven't played in a long time. But yeah, my number three is Android Netrunner, which is a two-player competitive card game, kind of like Magic the Gathering, but it's asymmetric, themed around hacking and, like, cyberpunk stuff. But yeah, one person is the runner and the other people are corporations. And so the runner is the hacker and you're trying to go into the corporations, and the corporations are playing cards face down, which are defending things. And then the runner is trying to build up their, like, hacking tools and then go through and steal things from the corporation. And everything's cards. It's a competitive card game where you're, like, building a deck ahead of time, like Magic the Gathering. You have to build two decks, one for each side, because it's asymmetric. But yeah, I used to play a long time ago. We played, like, in tournaments and stuff, and then we, like, stopped going to tournaments for a couple times and then just fell behind and then, like, just stopped playing, because with those games, if you fall behind, you're just, like, out. And we stopped playing casually too, because we were playing in tournaments. So yeah, but it was a lot of fun. Android Netrunner, it's no longer in print, but they have System Gateway from Null Signal Games, which is available for print and play, but also you can buy them off of, like, card printing sites. So yeah, you can get into Netrunner still. It's just not called that anymore.
All right. My number three is Race for the Galaxy, which was one of the first hobby board games that I ever played, actually. I have been playing Race for the Galaxy for 18 years, because it was introduced to me back in 2007 when I first started playing hobby board games. Yeah, I know, I was thinking about it and I was like, holy moly. Now, admittedly, I don't play it a lot. Like, I have played it regularly over that time span, like as recently as the past year. It's one of those games that just, like, every time it comes out, I enjoy it. And over the years, I collected all of the expansions, and I enjoy playing some of the expansions in different contexts. Like, some of the expansions specifically work in a two-player context better. If I'm playing multiplayer, some of them are a little less good, but I really, really love Race for the Galaxy. And the other games that have come out in that same world, there's Roll for the Galaxy, there's Jump Drive, there's the Race for the Galaxy board game, which the name is escaping me now. I like all of them. I've played them all. I enjoy them all. And Race for the Galaxy was the first. So that's my number three.
I played it once in, like, 2009 and never got into it. But I did play Roll for the Galaxy, and I liked that.
Well, there you go.
My number two is Le Havre, which is a game I actually own, but I also still haven't played it in a while. But Le Havre is a worker placement game by Uwe Rosenberg, and it's a game I've only played three player, which I think it's best at three player, or that I've heard.
Wait, but I was going to say, how can you say it's best if that's the only way you've played it? Just because other people said it. You just believe everybody.
Other people have said it. I think it gets too long at four players, but you're going around getting resources and stuff, and then you're buying buildings, building buildings. The buildings are action spaces that people can go on, but other people can go on the ones that you've built, and then they like pay you a fee to go use your building, or you can go on them for free. And then you're building ships, and you have to feed your people with ships. Very thematic.
Yummy!
but then another cool thing is like, there's all these different resources. There's like cows and wheat and all these things, but then you convert them to other things. So there's like a building where you convert the cows to like meat and leather, and you convert the fish to smoked fish. So you're converting these to other things that are worth more, and then you get like the leather and the something else to make something else. Like, you're doing lots of conversions of things to make it worth a lot more. So like, I like that building up of things and doing multiple steps to make it into something better. There's a lot of that in Le Havre, and then also just like buildings and going to other people's buildings and trying to get a good building so that people will go to yours and pay you stuff. But yeah, Le Havre.
My number two is The Crew, and I want to specify, because both versions of The Crew are in the top 100, I am talking about the original, not Mission Deep Sea. I prefer the original. I like them both, but I prefer the original. It is my favy. So, The Crew, we have discussed on the show at length in the past. It is a cooperative, trick-taking card game where you are trying to complete missions. Generally, some number of players will be required to collect certain cards out of the deck in the process of trick-taking, and you are limited in how you can communicate with one another by the rules of the game, and you're just trying to accomplish those goals without talking to each other, basically. It's real fun, both digitally and in person. I've played through all 50 missions, and I will still play it more, and I really like it. So that is why The Crew is my number two.
Cool. I think a lot of people would prefer the Mission Deep Sea one, right?
They do, and I don't... Well, okay, so if you're just talking about playing a single scenario one time, then Mission Deep Sea has more variability. But if you're talking about the experience of playing through the campaign of either one, the first one is better because it's the same every time for each mission. Whereas Mission Deep Sea, you're drawing stuff to like, you have like a certain number of goals you have to meet for a given like level. And if you fail and you play it again, you don't have the same goal the second time. You draw different goals. And so you don't get to replay the exact same thing. I mean, I guess theoretically you could if you wanted to, but that's not how the game is set up, essentially. So while it is more variable, the campaign experience of the first one is why I like the first one more. Okay.
I think I liked Mission Deep Sea better because like some scenarios in The Crew, like I think there were like, depending on setup, it could just be bad, like depending on what cards you had to take or something. But the Mission Deep Sea did something with that. I don't remember exactly. Neither of them were high on my list.
Yeah, there were like things set up to like make it so things were possible. I don't remember how it worked either, but I know what you're talking about.
All right. My number one favorite game from the BGG Top 100 is Crokinole. This is a dexterity flicking game. It's pretty much pure flicking dexterity. You're flicking discs. It's a big wooden circular board that you can put on a table. So it's a tabletop game. And then you're flicking these wooden discs into the hole in the center. And then there's pegs around it. And you're trying to flick through the pegs. And then if your disc stays on the board, then the other person has to hit your discs. And it's just flicking back and forth and trying to get the most points. It's lots of fun. We have a Crokinole board. But we still haven't played it as much as we should, though. Yeah, I need to play Crokinole again.
I have a Crokinole board as well. And I do not play as often as I would like to. It's probably also just outside of my top five. My number one is Castles of Burgundy. It used to be number one on the BGG 100. It's not anymore. Time has maybe done a little bit of a number on it, or the new hotness has kind of overridden it a bit, but it is still a beloved game, and for good reason. It's just solid. Castles of Burgundy, you are acquiring tiles to build up your kingdom, and the tiles are of multiple different types and do different things. You can score in a whole bunch of different ways. There's a little bit of variability in what happens every round and a little bit of luck in what happens every round, but you generally have ways to mitigate those things, and it's just solid, and I love it. The more I play it, the more I love it, and I'm sad that I came to this one so late. Just a few years ago was the first time I played it, and I now love it and play it all the time. So that is my number one, Castles of Burgundy. We would love to hear from you all what your favorite game in the BGG Top 100 is. So please tell us on social media or in the Blitz Discord and let us know what your fave from BGG's Top 100 list is.
And that's it for this week's Board Game Blitz. Visit our website, BoardGameBlitz.com, for more content and links. This episode was sponsored by Gray Fox Games. The deluxe edition of After the Empire that comes with all the bells and whistles, including custom game trays, is currently 20% off at grayfoxgames.com. 20% off not enough for you? That discount will stack with our normal promo code, BLITZ10, that gets you 10% off your entire cart at checkout. Join the Blitzketeer community on Discord for game nights, discussions, and more by following the link in the show notes. Support the show by leaving us a rating and review on your podcast provider. And if you like us a lot and want to support us monetarily and get some cool perks, check out our Ko-fi at ko-fi.com/boardgameblitz today. Our theme song was composed by Andrew Morrow. Until next time, when you play upon a board, watch out for your neighbor's horde. Bye, everyone.
Bye.
My number five is Azul, published in 2017.
It's from the future.
Okay. I played it once in like 2009. And that's it for this week's Board Game Blitz. Blitz, blitz.
Blitz, blitz. Blick a blitz.